Welcome to the Live Like It's True podcast, where we look at some of the most interesting and astonishing stories of the Bible and ask, how can we live like this story is true? I'm your host, Shannon Popkin. I'm an author, a speaker, and a Bible teacher. And here on the podcast, I'm inviting you to drink deeply of the true story of the Bible and live like it's true. I'm so excited to tell you about my two new books launching this spring. And here in the podcast, I'll be hosting two series in correlation with each of these books. So first, we'll do the Sarah series, and we'll look at the life of Sarah in Genesis 12 through 21, which is the topic of my brand new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. I love this story of the Bible, and I can't wait to dive in with you, both in the pages of this new book and here on the podcast. My second book launching is Comparison Girl for Teens. So excited about this book, co-authored by my dear friend, Lee Nienhuis. We poured our hearts into this super fun and truth-packed resource that we know is going to help so many teens find freedom from the comparison trap. So here on the podcast, we'll be doing a comparison series, looking at how Jesus compared in a completely different way. I hope that every one of these amazing conversations will inspire you to better know the story, share the story, and live like the story is true. In these early episodes of the Sarah series, I'm talking with four women whose stories were highlighted in my new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises. I'll be weaving thoughts from throughout Sarah's story, found in Genesis 12 through 21, into these conversations. And then later on in the series, we'll return to our more typical format and talk through Sarah's story scene by scene. I just know you're going to want to hear each one of these conversations with Bible teachers, Courtney Doctor, Ann Swindell, Carol Kent, and others. And so let's jump into our conversation for today. Heather Kofer, welcome to Live Like It's True.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be here.
Heather, you and I have, I feel like we've connected for a number of years. I've run into you like twice, I think, at the Revive Our Hearts conferences, or maybe Gospel Coalition was the other one, right? Let me just share your bio here real quick. You are a wife and a mom living in Northern Colorado. You have a passion for encouraging women to love Jesus. You're the author of Expectant, Cultivating a Vision for Christ-Centered Pregnancy. And you've written for some of my favorite ministries, Set Apart Ministries, Risen Motherhood, Well-Watered Women, along with Revive Our Hearts. You are soon to be the mother of six. You have five kids expecting number six.
Yes.
So you're living your message, right?
By God's grace.
Yes. Well, and spending a lot of time expectant, right?
That's exactly right.
Today, I want to take you back to childhood. Because in our story of Sarah, she was taken out of her homeland and sent to a foreign place where she lived for the rest of her life. Now, you haven't lived in a foreign country for the rest of your life, but you spent a good portion of time living in a foreign country, right? So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. When I was 7 years old, my family moved to Mongolia. So my parents and my seven siblings. And we lived there for 12 years, and they went as missionaries. We were a part of a Mongolian church and a church planting team. And I loved it. I loved living there, but living in a place where the language is different, you look different. No matter how long I lived there, when I'd go out in public, I was always reminded that I stuck out like a sore thumb. With my red hair and my freckles. And it was a joy. Love the people. Yeah. And it was something that I will always cherish, the experiences that I learned from that. And as I get older, I think I become more and more aware of just how significant some of the spiritual realities are that the Lord taught me through living in a place where I didn't necessarily fit.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, let's go to those spiritual lessons here in a minute, but I want to go back to 7-year-old Heather with her red hair living in Mongolia. I mean, the only thing I know about Mongolia is basically Mongolian barbecue. That's about all I have heard. But tell us, where is Mongolia?
Sure. Mongolia is sandwiched between Russia and China. So it's literally landlocked right between those two countries. The language they speak is Mongolian. And the food that we would consider Mongolian barbecue is, it would probably be a little bit closer to what they would have in what they call Inner Mongolia, which is a part of China. So,
okay. So were you taller than your friends, your Mongolian friends, and you had different hair color and different skin color? Yes.
Yes. Taller. And yes. In fact, one of the things that I had to get used to in my teen years, because I left when I was 19, was the the size difference. Mm-hmm. Like to find something that fit correctly, even just body shape. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'd be looking at size like XXXXL.
Oh,
you
my
know,
goodness. Where, yeah, that's hard on a 19-year-old.
Yeah, where just working working through some of those things.
Well, and for if you're just listening, you might, you know, be picturing Heather in a way that is not true to her. She probably wears maybe a smaller medium, right? Is that true?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're not XXXL in America, but there, it was probably, you didn't fit in the clothes. You didn't fit in the, what other ways did you feel like you didn't fit?
Well, I learned the language somewhat well. I'd never learned it fluently. The language, Mongolian language, is a very difficult language for native English speakers to learn. Okay. Because it's very backward, some of the sounds that you have to make. I learned how to pronounce things well, but I never learned it fluently where I could have deep conversations with people. Mm-hmm. And that always was a struggle. When I love people, I love getting to know people well. And I'm a word person too. Mm-hmm. So it felt hard when there were people I really wanted to get to know and who were so kind and so welcoming. But there was always the struggle of communicating past the very basic level. Mm-hmm. And so that was something that I always grappled with. And I still look back on, wish I had known the language better.
Yeah.
But yeah, those and cultural things that were very different culturally, that even as a child, I had to learn how to keep those from rubbing me the wrong way or becoming offended or not offending them by things that were so normal to us.
That's interesting, because you don't usually think of a child as being offended, right? You know, children are just kind of oblivious to cultural, social norms or whatever. So what were the things that you had to guard against being offended about?
Yeah, well, like one thing that is different there is things like lines, or like if you're waiting at the store, right? Mm-hmm. You just sort of push your way to, they don't have your same sort of formal lines that you have. Yes. So for me, being just bumped into, you know, that's, they didn't have the same sense of personal space is
yeah.
very different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I've always been somebody who, as much as I don't mind affection and all that, I do have a sense of personal space.
Yeah.
It's very different than that culture. And that was something that I had to get used to.
Yeah, that's so interesting. When we were in the Middle East, my husband and I got to travel. I got to speak in a couple different countries over there. But in between, we visited Israel. And that's where I mostly noticed, like, I remember crossing the border and thinking like, is there no line? Cause everyone's just pushing towards the counter. They don't do lines, you know? And that has helped me to rethink lots of different Bible stories where in my head, I pictured them lining up, you know, coming to bring their sick people to Jesus or whatever it is. And I have to like, just kind of get rid of that imagery in my mind, because I think they were all crowding in the way that they do in that culture. It's I wonder if it has something to do with a more communal culture versus an individualistic. You know, we think of ourselves as individuals. We have our place in line, you know, and whoever's in the front of the line is served first and, you know, go to the back of the line or whatever. And they just think more collectively, more communally. Yeah. I remember hearing a story. This was so interesting to me. There was a new train station, or I'm sorry, a new bus in
Jerusalem, and they had to do this ad campaign that said, you know, it actually basically the message of the ad was it actually saves time if you will wait in line. Because what would happen, like the bus was getting all off schedule because the bus would come to a new stop. And rather than waiting for the people to get off the people getting on the bus would crowd in first and the people getting off the bus couldn't get off the bus. Oh, and my. So like imagine all of the people shuffling and how much time that it wasted. And so the bus was consistently late. Because of this. So they did this huge marketing campaign, like it'll actually save you time if you'll wait in line. It's like something that's so, you know, we're just kind of accustomed to that. Of course, you'd wait for the people to get off the bus, but that's different there. Yeah.
Yep.
And it sounds like you experienced that in a number of different settings. God's promises are like a set of parentheses. The first one is when he makes the promise. The second one is when he keeps it. And you never have one without the other. But often there's this long stretch between the two, much longer than we first imagined, right? That's what we see in Sarah's story found in Genesis 12 through 21. God promised a son, but in this wide stretch between the parentheses, she wondered, would God keep his promises? Could he? I'm Shannon Popkin, inviting you to come find the answer to those questions, both for Sarah and yourself, in my brand new 6-week Bible study titled Shaped by God's Promises, Lessons from Sarah on Fear and Faith. Find out how you too can be shaped by God's promises in the waiting.
Yeah. Yep. It's something that I just had to let go of and something that things that I had to be aware of that would be considered offensive, like giving, you know, handing something to someone with my left hand. That would have been so offensive.
Oh, what? So, why is that? I've never heard of that.
I don't know all of the reasons behind it. I have a feeling that there's probably historical significance to that too. But even to this day here, I feel like if I'm at a drive-through window or something, and of course, as the driver, it's usually what
your left hand,
on your left hand. Mm-hmm. And so I still to this day find myself switching over and doing that with my right hand. Out of that, like I cannot hand something to somebody with my left hand.
That's interesting.
And so remembering, like learning those things as a child, or if you step on somebody's foot, that's extremely offensive. Mm-hmm. And so you have to reach out and grab their hand, just squeeze it. And that's sort of a sign of like, no offense was meant and they squeeze it back. Like none was taken. Okay. And so I remember a few times accidentally stepping on people's feet, coming back and reaching out my hand. I was like, oh, all I have to say is sorry or something. And they're not going to be offended. They're not going to expect me to reach out my hand. But yeah, some of those things that just became really ingrained in me. It was such a mix of culture, being from the U.S., mm-hmm. but integrating in a culture where you had to be aware that remembering that you are an ambassador for the kingdom. And my parents were amazing at discipling us mm-hmm. in that way. But then even coming back here to the U.S. was strange because mm-hmm. then I was like, you know, I remember coming back as an 18-year-old and I did not know how to use a card reader because in Mongolia it was only cash. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a driver's license yet because you can't get a driver's license there till you're 21. And the driving there, I wouldn't have wanted to do that anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people would look at me like I was just the craziest person because I'm standing there and I don't know how to use this card reader. So they're having me walk me through all this process. Aww. Or they didn't have fast food. So standing and trying to order from a fast food restaurant, and it's just like, feels paralyzing, but
so many options, right?
Yeah, but I'm nearly an adult and people are like, what is wrong with you? And it's just getting used to that mix both ways where you feel like that felt like home. I've loved it. I loved living there. But then I'd come back here. There were things about here that I absolutely loved too, friends and family that were so dear to me. But finding that the culture here was unique too because of these things that were so a part of me that I realized that, oh, wow, nobody even thinks about that here. Mm-hmm. And so those have all been things that I've really wrestled through with the Lord, particularly in regards to my identity. And he's been so kind and gracious in his walking me through that process.
It's interesting, in Abraham and Sarah's story, God really was stripping away their former identity. Mm-hmm. He asked them to leave behind everything that defined who they were, their land that they were from, their family, their culture, you know, everything. And this is in a day and age when people didn't just do moves to different countries. Right. This didn't happen. Like, I'm sure you weren't the only non-Mongolian people living in Mongolia. Like, people had met others who were from different cultures, but probably Abraham and Sarah were very, very much minorities. And I always think the language thing, you know, you mentioned that before. I think the Tower of Babel is so intriguing, and how God spliced off all of these different families. Like, really, he divided them up by languages, because they were trying to build this tower. They were basically flexing their independence, their lack of reliance on God. Like, look what we can do without you, God. And the text says he leaned down, you know, to see their itty bitty tower. Like, so just to kind of contrast their abilities without him. But so he divides them up. He splices them into different family groups, mm-hmm. and then he selects one family group. It's Abraham and Sarah, that he's a family of two, you know, that he is going to bless and use that family to bless all of the other family groups. But what's so interesting is what throughout the ages, what has kept everybody segmented into their own little family groups, nations, it's language. It's that language barrier. And what you're describing, I mean, I've experienced it too, being in different countries where if you don't understand the language, you are set apart from the rest of the culture, the rest of the world. And so we have to assume that Abraham and Sarah did not speak the same language. Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't have any proof of that, but we know that Egypt, you know, that was a different language. And right. I think they all had their own. I mean, if God divided them up by family groups, yeah. even the way that they talked, you know, and I know a lot of cultures will have like a language that they share and then their own little dialect, yeah. regardless of whether they shared any language with these other people groups, they were set apart just by speaking. You know, we just had Easter. Last week was Easter, and I was reading the story about how Peter is warming himself by the fire, and they just noticed that he was from Galilee by the way that he talked, and identified him with Jesus by the way that he talked. And he's like, no, no, no. I mean, huge failure in Peter's life to not identify with Christ. But like, yeah, language, it's such a barrier. And then Heather, putting you on the spot here, but yeah. tell us about Pentecost. What does God do with language at Pentecost, which is like a complete reversal of the Tower of Babel?
Right, where all of a sudden people are, you know, the Holy Spirit fills people, and there are people who are proclaiming truth in all kinds of different languages. And it was so clear that God was saying, I want my truth to go to everyone.
Yeah, so his Spirit is bringing this unifying, like they're all segmented clearly in their own language groups, even in yeah. Jerusalem as they're celebrating the different feasts, but God brings them together yeah. through speaking in tongues, mm-hmm. and they are collectively joining into this one family. But I think it's really interesting that God does consistently send his children mm-hmm. into cultures that are not their own, right?
Yes.
To the text, if you read it literally, God said to Abraham, get thee out of your home. Like, leave yeah. all of that identity behind. What do you see in God's plan for missions and for the gospel? What do you see in that, Heather, this desire of God, like, get thee out?
Yeah. Well, I remember, you know, and a lot of these things are vague memories, but I've heard my parents talk about it a lot in the years since we moved over there. And as they were evaluating those things, I caught this vision that they had the reality of the Great Commission to go into all the world mm-hmm. and to make disciples of all nations, there was something so significant in their obedience to say, I'm willing to leave mm-hmm. everything mm-hmm. for the sake of loving Christ and introducing him to other people and also equipping others, like my mm-hmm. parents were doing, yeah. mm-hmm. to help others in their specific roles that God had called them to. And it was beautiful. And I think that that was an amazing part of our particular story is because we worked with so many different people from different countries that we saw that gathering of people from mm-hmm. all over the world who were yeah. there for the one purpose of making Jesus known to these people who had not had the gospel preached to them for so long. And I have had people ask me, I remember one time in high school, someone who was a part of our high school youth group was asking me some questions.
In Mongolia or?
From back our sending church here in the
okay.
States,
mm-hmm. okay.
Was asking me about living in Mongolia. And so I was just sharing some of the things that I had learned and gleaned about living there. And he said, wow, I just don't think I could ever do that. And I wrote him back and I said, well, would you have God called you to?
Uh-huh.
I never heard from him again. But I just thought, wow, I saw that model to me. The fact that we have one life to live mm-hmm. and God knows exactly what he's put us on this earth for. Mm-hmm. And for some of us, it's going to be to get thee out. It's going to be to go into all the world. Mm-hmm. And there is nothing more beautiful that you can do, more significant that you can do with your life than to honor and glorify God, to obey him in the calling he's put on you, whether that's to go into a foreign nation, whether that's to minister to refugees in the next town over, whether that is whoever it is, to minister to those who are lost and in need of hope that we can only find in Jesus. Yeah. And having that modeled to me in such an incredibly significant way from the time I was so young taught me just how amazing it is to obey the Lord and the blessing that comes from that. My parents did an incredible job of teaching us, like, we're not just going and doing this because, well, they didn't just give us trite answers. Mm. They showed us from scripture and they showed us this is a gift. This is a blessing. And yes, there are things that we had to leave behind. We had to count the cost. I mean, one of the big things over there is that, or there was very little access to medical care. And so, you know, there were some of us who were prone to certain medical things that were scary. And a lot of people asked my parents, are you sure you want to take 8 kids over there with, you know, something might happen to them? And they said, we know that. But God knows that too, mm-hmm. and he's called us. And all we can do is show our children that the best thing we can possibly do is entrust ourselves into his hands if he's calling us to do something. And I have never lost the significance of that kind of display of obedience. And I will praise God till the day I die that my parents modeled that for me.
Mm, that is beautiful, Heather. That does parallel Abraham and Sarah, because it wasn't... there was nothing beneficial about leaving everything, their whole identity behind. There was nothing beneficial about moving into this foreign land, because I kind of wonder, you know, when they left, they were promised these huge promises. But when they got there, I mean, there were already Canaanites living in the land. Like, that was the big surprise. I wonder if they were picturing this wide open land that nobody lived in, right? Because they weren't really given a lot of specifics. Just go where I'll show you. And I also wonder if Sarah was expecting to get pregnant on the way, you know? So they arrive and it's decades before they have this promised baby. So they live this long stretch of their life in obedience, but not pragmatically, it didn't really make a lot of sense. And, you know, I'm just picturing your mom with 8 kids, knowing the risks. And, you know, what if one of them gets meningitis. One of them gets, you know, some life-threatening thing that kids get, and there is no medevac. You know, there's no way immediately to get that help. It feels like you're really throwing yourself at God's mercy, which is what Abraham and Sarah were doing. Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
So did you ever have a life-threatening situation while you were in Mongolia?
Yes. So when my mom got pregnant with babies 7 and 8 while we lived over there.
Okay.
And when she was expecting baby 8, she had some sort of strange issue happen. They're still not exactly sure what it was, but it put her into preterm labor.
Okay.
Very, very early on. Oh, so she was only probably 20 something weeks at the time. So she was on bed rest. And if she had delivered my youngest sister there, she would have, well, my sister would have died. And my mom, she also needed some extra care as well. And they ended up, they were prolonging this as long as they could to keep her there to try to get this labor to stop. We were planning to go out of the country to Thailand, which has much better medical care, to deliver the baby there. But it got so desperate, she did end up needing to be evacuated from the country.
Okay.
So they came. She was still 2 months out from delivering the baby, but she had been on bed rest at that point for probably 2 months. And they came on my birthday. They came and they got my mom and took her out of the country.
How old were you at that point?
That was on my 12th birthday.
Okay.
And I remember it was very significant, a conversation that my dad had with me, because it was so devastating. It was devastating to all of us and really scary that all these people were coming to putting my mom on a stretcher and taking her out of the country.
Well, I am sorry to leave you at that cliffhanger. You're going to want to come back next time and hear the rest of that story from Heather, along with more, in our episode titled Faith Tested, One Missionary Kid's Story of Commissioning in Crisis. Did you love hearing from Heather? I just love her faith. And you can find more from her story in my brand new Bible study, Shaped by God's Promises. It's releasing this spring with Our Daily Bread. It's a 6-week Bible study that will inspire you to live like it's true that God is faithful. Can I just remind you that each of these stories from the Bible is absolutely true? Rather than giving us a list of facts to memorize about himself, God gave us a book filled with stories, and each one helps us to know him and to understand this overarching story that we are all in. So I hope that you'll take some time looking at this story in your Bible. To help you study, I've put together my free Live Like It's True workbook, which includes my false narratives watch list, my story elements bookmark, and more. Live Like It's True is part of the Resound Podcast Network. For more gospel-centered resources, visit resoundmedia.cc. We've got that link for you, along with links to any of the other resources that we've mentioned, in the show notes. Thanks so much for joining me. And now it's time to go live like it's true.